So, Shruti Gita means Shruti is Vedam, isn't it? Vedam, how glorifying Krishna, that is Veda Stuti, or what is called Shruti Gita. And when we started Bhagavadam, there is a verse there, Nigamakalpataroor Galidam Phalam. Third verse, I think. Nigamakalpataroor Galidam Phalam, Shukamukhat Amrutadravasam Yudam, Pibada Bhagavatam Rasamalayam, Muhuraho Rasika Bhuvibhavukaha. That is that verse. What it means is that from Vedam, Vedam is compared to a tree, Kalpavraksham, compared to a Kalpavraksham. And Vedam is called as Nigamam. It is called Nigamam, Nigamakalpam, Nigamakalpataroor Galidam. That means the Kalpavraksham are called Vedam. Vedam is called as a Kalpavraksham. Kalpavraksham means desire tree. You may heard about that desire tree. We all like to see that tree, isn't it? Desire tree. Whatever desires you have, if you say, the tree will come and provide, give it to you. It will drop from the tree. That's why it's called desire tree. Desire tree is called Kalpavraksham. Vedam is compared to Vedam, another name for the Vedam is Nigamam. And Vedam is compared to a Kalpavraksham, to a desire tree. It's compared to a desire tree. So, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, it says here, Nigamakalpataroor Galidam Phalam. That means a fully ripened fruit has fallen from that tree. From that tree, a fully ripened fruit has fallen from that tree, and that is Srimad Bhagavatam. That is how Bhagavatam is spoken. Nigamakalpataroor Galidam Phalam. A fully ripened fruit has fallen from that Nigamam. Nigamam means Vedam, which is the tree, compared to a tree. What else? Shukha mukhat amrutadrava samyutam. Normally, shukam means what? Shukam means two meanings. One, Shukha Brahmarshi. Other one is parrot. Generally, if a fruit on a tree, if it is bitten by a parrot, it means that it is very sweet. That's why the parrots know which fruit is sweet, and they will only bite those fruits. That's how you will identify easily that if it was bitten by the parrot, it means it's a very sweet, good fruit. Shukha mukhat amrutadrava samyutam. Similarly, Srimad Bhagavatam was bitten by Shukha Brahmarshi, Sukadeva Goswami, and it has come out in the form of amrutadrava samyutam. Like a nectar, it started flowing out from Vedam. Because it was bitten by our great personality, Sri Shukha Brahmarshi or Sukadeva Goswami. He bitten that. So Shukam has these two meanings. One is parrot and the other one is our Shukha Brahmarshi. That's why Shukha Mukhat Amrutadrava Samyutam. Then it says Pipada Bhagavadam Rasam Alayam. This Bhagavadam is full of rasam. Because with all the different ways, Krishna's different activities, appearances, great devotees and their relationship with Krishna, their glorifications with Krishna, and Krishna's reciprocation to them, to Uddhava, and all that is rasam. It is actually rasam. So, Pipada Bhagavata Rasam, that is the rasam of Srimad Bhagavatam. Pipada Bhagavatam Rasam Alayam. Alayam means it's a house of rasams. There is various rasams in the Bhagavatam, all different kinds of rasam. Shandarasam is there, Sakhirasam, Valsalyarasam, and Madhuryarasam. They are all rasas which are drunk from this alayam, this house of Srimad Bhagavatam. Also, so it says, Pipada Bhagavatam Rasam Alayam, Pipada. Alayam Pipada. Drink this nectar, drink this nectar. Muhuraho Rasika Bhuvi Bhavukaha. Drinking this nectar, and those who can drink that nectar from Srimad Bhagavatam, they are called Rasikas. They are called Rasika. One who can enjoy that rasam in the Bhagavatam, he is called Rasika. So, drink that, Muhuraho Pipada. again drink and drink as much as you like. Rasigaha pibhada. Rasigaha, that means those who have got rasam, they only can drink that. Bhavukaha pibhada. Again, keep drinking that nectar. Nikamakalpataror galidam phalam sugamukharamrudadravasam yudam pibhada bhagavadam rasamalayam muhuraho rasigabhuvi bhavukaha. So, Nigamam, the reason why the word has come, Nigamam, because Srimad Bhagavatam gives that direction in which one should go to reach the ultimate goal, Brahmadattvam. The direction in which one should go, it gives that direction. Therefore, it is known as Nigamam. Nishchayena avagati karanam. That is how they define that. Nishchayena avagati karanam. Because it does hitam. It does the good thing to us, right thing for us. It does not engage us in the wrong way. It engages in the right way, which will lead us in the right direction in life. That is the main purpose behind it. It's not offering sense gratification. Instead, it is directing us in the right way in life. That is one reason why it's called Nigamam. Agamam, Nigamam are two words used in relationship with that. So, because it is not giving sense gratification. When it gives sense gratification, the same thing is used in two different words in the Kathamanishad. It is called as Shreyas and Prayas. All the devotees will know about these two words. Shreyas and Prayas. Shreyasa means what is ultimately beneficial for us. Prayasa means that which gives you immediate happiness. Just like some happiness in material life is all temporary and immediate. Whereas spiritual life is long, for long last, it's forever, but it takes a long time to have it. Spiritual realization and spiritual happiness takes a long time to realize it and to have it. So there is a difference between Shreyas and Prayas. And that the same thing here. That Vedam has got this word, Nigamam, because it offers what is known as Hitam. Hitam means Shreyasa. Priyam means what is Prayasa. Prayasa means it may immediately give you some happiness, but on long term, it is going to destroy you. It's not going to get you anywhere. It's a destruction of the person. So all sense enjoyment is categorized in that way. So one is Priyam, other one is Hitam. Priyam is what we like. What we like is Priyam. But what is good for us is Hitam. What is good for us is Hitam. Many times what you like may not be very good. What we like may not be very good. And what is good we may not like. What is good we may not like. Also, Vibhishana goes to Ravana and says to him that you go and deliver Sita Devi back to Ramachandra and surrender to him. It will be good for you if you do that. And when he said that, Ravana didn't listen, did he? Ravana didn't listen. At that time, Vibhishana says to him that whatever that is spoken directly, what is good for someone, even though it's going to give some trouble to him, he may not like it. He will look at the trouble what he has to face for doing that, instead of seeing his ultimate benefit, what he will get from that. He won't look at that. Therefore, whatever hitam that I have spoken to you, you are not going to listen to it. He says to Ravana. Vibhishana says this to Ravana. And then he says there, Vakta shrota cha durlabha. He says, Vakta shrota cha durlabha. So, those people who will speak hitam, what is good for you, they are very rare in this world. Similarly, those people who will listen to what is good for them, if it is spoken, they are also very rare. Who says this? Vibhishana says this. When he mentioned, talked to Ravana to take Sita Devi back to Ramachandra and ask for forgiveness and apologize to him, Ravana wouldn't listen at that time. When Ravana wouldn't listen at that time, he says that those who will listen to good advice, first of all, those who give the correct advice, proper advice, they are very rare. And those who will listen to that advice is also very rare. That's how he mentions that. Vaktacha shrotacha durlabha. Vaktacha shrotacha durlabha. So hitam may not be priyam. Sometimes it can be priyam. But hitam may not be always priyam. Therefore, because of this, in Vedam, they won't say like that. What they say is anushasanam. Anushasanam means shasana. Shasana means you are told you have to do it. That's how it is spoken in the Vedam. Vedam won't give you an option there. Vedam is not telling you, if you do this, it will be good for you. If you do this, it will be bad for you. No, Vedam doesn't address in that way. Vedam says to us that you must do this. It is the injunction like that. Therefore, it's called anushasanam. So, just like all the acharyas will mention about this, that Vedam is like this, just like a mother. When a mother chastises the child, what does he do? She just tells him to do it. Either do it or she has to. He has to face the music, isn't it? Mother is chastisement. So similar, in the same authority like the mother does to the child, Vedam also talks to us in the same way. So that is why you will see many statements like in the Upanishads also, Satyam Vada, Dharmam Chara, Swadhyayamam Pravachanaha, Pravadaha. All this, Satyam you must speak, Dharmam you should say in the path of Dharmam. All direct injunctions like that, for this reason only. So these are all Anushasanam. Anushasanam means it has to bring, it's like an order to us, or to bring that you should have this discipline in life. That's how Vedam talks about it. Vedam doesn't tell us if you do this it will be good for you, because then you are giving a choice there, isn't it, to people. Vedam is not giving a choice. Vedam is telling us, do this. It's necessary, you must do it. So all injunctions in the Vedic literature are like that. Krishna also mentions that balanam anushasanam. Like you instruct the children, when mother instructs the child, it's like an instruction. You must do it. And the child has to listen to the mother. There is no choice given there. Similarly, Vedam also instructs us, don't gives any choice. Because Vedam knows what is the right thing. And Vedam knows what is good for us. Therefore there is no choice here. So Matruvati Shruti, like a mother, is Shruti. Though sometimes, therefore, they will call Shruti as mother. Shruti considered as a mother. Shruti Janani, it says. Janani means mother. Shruti Janani means Madhruvar Shruti Janani. Like a mother, Shruti instructs us. Like a mother instructs the child, Shruti. Vedam instructs us, or Shruti is a mother. So Vedamada also she is addressed as. Then, but never said like mother, in the sense that Acharya Swamiji says is not like a mother even. She says even the mothers also, Madrasa Sahasrebhyaha Pi Karunaya Gariyasi. There are many mothers in this world, isn't it? There are many mothers, Shruti Janani. Even if you keep thousands of mothers together, mother has the greatest karunyam or love for the child, isn't it? A mother has the greatest love for the child. If you bring thousands of mothers together and if you add up all their karunyam or mercy for, or the grace for the love for the child, more than that is the love of the Vedas towards the people, towards those who wants to follow her. Because mother has a love for the child, she has an attachment for the child, she has what they call asakti. Asakti means attachment, don't it? Excessive attachment is called asakti. So asakti is there, attachment is there, and liking. And mother, because of that, mother will do a lot of things for the children. Lot of things for the children. But you cannot always say that what the mother is doing for you is good. You cannot say that. Because sometimes the child may not have hunger. The mother will say, eat. Because I have cooked so many nice things, you should eat. So that means it is not out of You may, that means, although she has attachment and love for the child, doesn't mean that she is doing the right thing, isn't it? Whereas Vedam, Acharya Swami is saying this, that Vedam is even higher than a mother. Mother has love for the child, no doubt, but mother doesn't know, what, always does not know that what is right thing to do. That problem can happen because of attachment. Because of attachment. Whereas Vedam knows in all circumstances what is right for us. That Vedam knows. That is why Vedam is compared even higher than a mother. If you keep thousands of mothers together and if you add up all their love for the child, with more love than that, Vedam is instructing us. Vedam is telling us what is right thing to do. So, for example, in the how does people get addicted to coffee and tea? Mother introduces that to them, or father. At home, when they are small children, first thing they don't want coffee and tea. Initially, first cup of coffee or tea given to the child will not like it because of the taste of it, isn't it? Nobody likes the first taste. But later on, what happens? After a few years, you cannot live without that. So, mother introduces this. Mother says, first gives a cup of coffee, and then child, first time when the child takes it, says, no, it tastes bitter, very bitter. No, no, it will be alright, I'll put some sugar into it. You put two or three tablespoons of sugar into it, and get it used to it. And says, oh, you should drink tea, coffee, it's good for you. The blood circulation, all the signs will start coming then. Blood circulation, and then keep you awake and you won't get sleep, and examinations time, mother says, have a few cups of tea or coffee, and that will keep you awake. You can study as much as you like throughout the night, all the garbage what you have to study then. So that's what it is saying, that mother's judgment may not always be correct. It can go wrong. But in Veda's case, that cannot happen. That is the reason behind it. Vedas have only one intention, to get us out into where we are originally belong to. That means our spiritual realization. And nothing can go wrong in that. There is nothing after that to do anything in this world. Once we have realized the truth and gone back to our spiritual identity has happened to us, that's the end of our... There is no more search for knowledge after that. There's nothing else to acquire after that, nothing else to know after that. So many things, you will see in the Upanishads talking about that. So, but normally mother or father will be helpful in our life in this world. To settle down, to live comfortably in this world, they help the children. And rare cases, they can become a helpful person in crossing over material life. But that happens very rarely. Majority of cases, what will happen is that there can be a support for our material existence in this world. But normally, our ultimate realization, release from this material existence, may not happen through them. Very rarely, some places you may see that happening. Very rarely you will see that. That is why in some situations, mother or father can become the spiritual master also, in very, very rare situations that can happen. Normally it doesn't happen. So Shruti also addressed her, Shruti Madha, Shruti Janani has addressed her, is also a cause for our, she has become the cause of our liberation later. Atyantikam, Atyantika Kshemam, that is what it's called, Atyantika Kshemam. And she gives that Kshemam or permanent Shanti inside. Therefore, she is given this name Nigamam. Nigamam is given because of that. So, in that Vedam, there is Karmakandam, Upasanakandam, Jnanakandam. Like this, it is broken into. Karmakandam, Upasanakandam, Jnanakandam. Jnanakandam, Karmakandam, Upasanakandam. In these three ways, it is broken. From there, Karma Yogam, Bhakti Yogam, Jnana Yogam, all has come. All has come. So it is broken like this. But those who are doing research in the Vedam, you know, there are people who conduct research in everything. They like researching. They'll go to libraries and collect all the literature and bring it together in which year, who wrote the book, where the book was written, how many copies were sold, and like this, making a historical study of the book. That is called Bahiranga Parikshanam. Bahiranga Parikshanam means they are not studying Vedam actually. What they are doing is they are subjecting the Vedam to their intellectual satisfaction, in other words. So there, such people, for them, the essence is not important. Message is not important for them. That is what you find in the university and all that. That's what they do there. Bahiranga Parikshanam, it's called in the Shastram. Bahiranga Parikshanam means, you can see this, all these university professors, lecturers and all that. They open this school, institute for Vedic studies or institute for, you know, in the university, different things they open up, isn't it? And what do? They all teach them. How do they study Vedam? They study like this. They study who are all wrote which book. They are very, how many traditions, which year each tradition was born, and who are the great personalities appeared in that tradition. These are the important things for them. And then they will study the philosophical texts also. And they will start comparing from one to another. This acharya spoke like this, that acharya spoke like that, and things like that. And whatever that makes logic and sense to them, they will speak in those ways. And which period the Vedas belong to, they will come up with some answer. Then they will say, Rigvedam, this is the time when Rigvedam was compiled. This was the time when Yajurvedam was compiled. This time Samavedam appeared, this time Atharvanavedam appeared, like this. They want to know the date, the period when it appeared, who was the compiler, who created it. These are more important for them. That's what is more important for them. And there, those people are called who conduct Bahiranga Parikshanam. Bahiranga Parikshanam means external research, doing research on Vedam. Doing research on Vedam. So, and with that, there is no use to anybody. After doing all these things, it's of no use to anybody. And they will open a department in the university. They will invite students to join. And they will arrange some scholarships for the children, students to come. And they'll come and study this whole thing. Like they studied physics, chemistry, mathematics. Another studied Vedam. Also, they have studied in the same way. Nothing has happened after studying all that. So they will say that, and whatever they have, they talk there, some people may believe it, some people won't believe it. They won't take it very seriously also. Therefore, with this, it's no use to anybody at the end. All that is a Vedic way. Vedas are saying to us, don't do this, it's of no use to anybody. As far as, okay, it will keep a few people on the job. Yes, that will do. Like any other, so many jobs in this world, isn't it? Similarly, another job it is. But it's not used to anybody at the end. So Vedam says to us that it will go like this, research will go on. They are the people who do the research. Actually, they will know about everything about Vedic literature. They would have studied all the books from the, they must have found out who has written the book, when was it written the book, where was it written the book. All this information they will have. So when you hear from them, you will start thinking, oh, this person knows a lot. Yes, he knows a lot, but he doesn't know anything. That's the situation. That's why many of these scholars whom you meet in these universities, they are like that. They are in that nature. So, and they will say, and they, what else they do? They will break up Vedam into various categories, and they will start saying to us, there are so many things in the Vedam. They will start bringing about they think they have to write a thesis, isn't it, for to get their PhD. So, in order to do that, they have to find a subject. So, what they do, from the same Vedic literature, they will pick up something and they will expand on that. And they will present a paper on that. And there will be another bunch of idiots sitting there and reading this, what he has presented, this paper. And give him a lot of, they will recommend him to receive a PhD and he will get a PhD. And then he will wander around giving lectures in all the universities. Talking to them. This is what the Vedic literature in the modern world is happening with it. So, with this you can see, no spiritual advancement will happen in anyone with this. There are many people who went to university, isn't it? You know that they joined Krishna consciousness movement, and later on they thought that we are not getting what we want. We'll go to the university. They thought we'll get it there. So they start going to university, and they started opening institutes and started running courses, seminars, and these, that, and so many things going on. And now, then they started thinking, well, these devotees don't know anything. We are the scholars now. We have studied everything, and we have got the real thing is in our hand, because we know the date and time when it was spoken. That's what's important for them. So, in Mahabharatam, Dhritarashtra asked Sanal Sujata Maharshi one question. Asked him, what is Vedam, he said. What does Vedam mean? So, Sanal Sujata Maharshi says there, to answering that, it is called Sanal Sujadiyam. Sanal Sujata Maharshi, many, many great sages used to visit Dhritarashtra before the war. They all gave him good advice, but he didn't take it. So, Sanal Sujata Maharshi was one such great personality who came to see him. And there's a conversation between Dhritarashtra used to ask very interesting questions to him. So Dhritarashtra's questions and Sanal Sujata Maharshi's answer, that is what is called Sanal Sujadiyam. It comes in the Mahabharata, that particular part. So he asked this question, what is Vedam? Dhritarashtra asked this question, what is this thing called Vedam? So Sanal Sujata Maharshi says to him, knowledge of the self is Vedam. If you have realized the self, then that is Vedam. That's all it is. Nothing more than that. So, in other words, in Vedam, also in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is saying, Omityega Aksharam Brahmam Vyaharan Mamanusmaran. In one of the verses, 8th chapter, I think. Om, the letter Om is called Pranavam. Pranavam is that Pranavam, what it represents, what symbolizes that? But Pranavam represents something. What does Om represent? Om represents Brahmam. Brahmam, the absolute truth, in other words. That vastu, inside every one of us, is present as the soul. Is present as the soul. And knowing that is Vedam. Knowing that is Vedam. Because very difficult to define Vedam like other things. When you have self-realization, that is Vedam. That means you have studied, understood Vedam. Vedam means that, realizing the self. If you have not realized the self, it's all useless at the end. It's all of the uses at the end. So, because that Vedam of realizing the self is not so easy, it doesn't happen so easily, therefore this big Vedam has come about. All this Vedic literature has come about because of that. Because of that. Ega Vedasya Avijnanam Vedaste Bhavo Bhagan. Srimad Bhagavatam is also Vedam in the sense, if you look in the Chatushloki Bhagavatam, that four verses, there are four verses, Brahma has been instructed with four verses there, isn't it? Out of the four verses, actually it is not Chatushloki, it is Ekashloki. Ekashloki means there's only one verse. Out, we look at the four verses, it is the first verse that is referring to the truth. Other three are corollaries to that. In other words, unlike the first verse, the three other verses doesn't represent the truth as such, but help us to get to know the truth. It's not the truth. If you look at the four verses, Aham evasam evagre nanyadil sadasal param paschadaham yade dacha yovashishyada sosmiham. Krishna is saying, in the beginning only I existed, in the end also I existed, and in the middle only me exist, nothing else. That's what Krishna is saying. Aham evasam evagre nanyadil sadasal param paschad aham yade dacha yovashishyada sosmiham. That in the beginning, in the middle, and the end, only me exist. This is the first verse. Knowing that, and what is that me? That's reference to the soul, spirit soul. So to realize that is Vedam. To realize that is Vedam. So aham, 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 only Krishna exists, only the soul exists. So nothing else exists separately from Krishna. And in this world, in our life in this world, there is only one goal. What is that? Bhakti, Jnanam. These two things. Bhakti, Jnanam, Vairagyam. Bhagavatam says that, isn't it? Bhakti, Jnanam, Vairagyam. In order to culture this, to develop this, So that these three things eventually will take us to that state of self-realization, realizing the self. Swarupajnanam. Swarupajnanam means knowing oneself, what we are. Once we have come to know that, then there is nothing else to be known. So Upanishad says like this, Yal sukhat na aparam sukham. Once you have experienced self-realization, then there is nothing else to experience after that. Yal jnanal na aparam jnanam. After knowing that, there is nothing else to be known. Tad brahma iti avatharayet. That is brahmam. Know that, says the Upanishads. Know that. So, then after knowing this, after getting that happiness, after that you won't run after another happiness again, that happiness. Or after getting what knowledge, you have got that complete satisfaction inside, you won't run after anything else again. And what that will make one person perfect, complete in all aspects, Pujyam. Pujyam means, Pujyam is complete, isn't it? Pujyam, zero. Zero is complete. Zero, we say is zero in the mathematic one way, but in spiritual life in another way. Spiritual life, if you become Pujyam, you are complete. Whereas in mathematics, if you become Pujyam, it's zero. That means you are nothing. So it's opposite thing in mathematics and the... So, but it is a... Pujyam is referring to that. That's why you will see Parama Pujaniya. When you address some Mahalmas, you will say Param Pujaniya. It is coming from that. So, Param Pujaniya. So, Puja means because he is Purnam, he is complete, like zero. Zero is the only letter which is complete, isn't it? You can't change that. It's complete in all aspects. So, so here, similarly, we also talked about this before. Maya is also complete. Maya is referred by letter 8. Ashtadha Prakriti. 5 material elements, mind, intelligence and false ego. Those 8. 8 also represents the same. So, material world, creation is 8. Material nature is 8. And if you look at it in the way, through this complete thing, when you look at through your optical illusion, when you see that, you see this as the world. But actually it is only 5 material elements. But through our eyes, when you look at, only because through the eyes we look at it, we see these different forms, different names, all these things appears there. But in reality, that's 5 material elements. What's there is 5 material elements. Earth, water, air, ether and fire. But through this, what they call it as optical illusion. That means when the mind is seeing this creation through the eyes, it sees different things. Sees it as a brick, sees it as the wall, the windows, the metal, the wood, the table, the chair. All this is due to the looking it through the eye. That's why it happens that way. I know it is a little difficult thing to look in another way because we don't know any other way to look at things. That's another thing. But Shastram tells us that if you look at it through the eye, you will see in one way. You look at through the Shastram, you will see in another way. That's why it's called Shastra Chakshusa. Seeing through the Shastra. So, this thing that about the Upanishad statement that you can see everything is like that, that in, we want to see this Prapancham. Prapancham means creation as Krishna, isn't it? That's what we want to see. That's what Upanishads are telling us. Krishna is this world. It is soul, spirit. It's not this matter what we see now. So, what do we have to do? We have to see that inside us there is only one vastu. Vastu alone is there. And if you know that vastu inside is the same vastu outside, then it's complete. Vastu inside is same vastu outside. They give the example like this. You know these gaskets, which you use in the cookers and generally in the pressure cookers, they have this... the ring, Teflon or something, I don't know what it is, the material, rubber ring, yeah, rubber gasket, yeah, and like a circle attached to the lid, you close it and then turn it and then it seals any gap there, isn't it? So if you take that gasket and you can turn it into an 8 form, If you twist it, it can take the form of an 8. But if you leave the hand, it will come back to 0 again. Is it not? So similarly, this world also, we are seeing it in this way. It is in that twisted form of the gasket. But when that twisted vision goes away, then we will see the proper way as it is, the world. Our vision of the world will change. It's not anymore the way it is, looking like bricks and roads and tables and chairs and lights and metals and all these things will go, and our proper vision of this substance will be seen in the proper way. And that time you will know that the vastu inside is the same vastu that outside also. Vastu is not different. What is inside is the same vastu outside also. So, and if you realize the perfection inside, you will see the same perfection outside also. That is spiritual life. Self-realization, when it happens, you will realize everything what exists outside is also Krishna, not different from Him. So first perfection has to happen within, not outside. It has to happen within. So you have to see it inside. So that is the reason that mind or our attention first has to come from outside to inside, for this reason. Then if you realize the truth inside, you don't have to put effort a lot outside to know what the truth is. Everybody is searching after the truth, isn't it? Scientists are also doing the same thing. Only thing, they are doing in a very haphazard manner, without any understanding. They are thinking that one day they will find it. With that hope, they have been doing it for so many years now, searching the truth. They go and taking photographs of the Mars and photograph of all the planets, Saturn, and checking if there is life here, if there is life in Mars, if there is life in Saturn. Then somebody else says that there is life in some other planet. They checked and found out there is no life in the moon, they are saying. And like this, can you go on searching like this if life exists in any other planet? Because there are so many planets, millions and billions of planets. By the time you search in all these planets and come back, your life is over. It's not going to go longer than that, isn't it? So that, therefore, Vedam rejects that kind of inquiry. Vedas, the rishis found out the easiest way to understand this world, as far as the rishis are concerned, you first understand yourself first. If you understand what you are, then you will know what is outside. You don't have to search outside. That is why self-realization is given this importance. And in order to do that, your attention has to go inwards first, isn't it? Otherwise it won't happen. The reason why we are saying this is because this chapter, Shruti Gita, when you hear, it is difficult chapter. It is the most difficult chapter in the Bhagavatam, the Shruti Gita. And when you know that what is the difficulty? Difficulty is this, that our mind is normally directed towards this world, which is not even the proper way. We don't even see the world. We don't see the world properly. What we are seeing is a distorted view of the world. It's distorted from the Shastric viewpoint, isn't it? Shastram is telling us it's all Krishna. The whole world is Brahman, Krishna. We are saying, where is Krishna here? It's all, for us, it's all bricks and mortar and stone and mud and sky and clouds and water and other things. It's not Krishna for us. What happens? Through the eyes when you look at it, that's what you are seeing. So you are saying that's what it is. Shastram is telling us, no, you are not seeing it properly. You have to see it in the proper way, because you are looking through the eyes, you are seeing it that way. So, therefore, Upanishad's Vedam tells us that to see it properly, first you have to know what it is made of, and it is made of the same substance what is inside you, which is the soul. It is made of the same substance. Inside you, outside you, it's the same substance. And they are also telling us, if you know that substance what is inside you, if you know that, you will know that substance what is outside is the same thing what is inside. This is the way Upanishads takes you. The rishis have thought through these things in such deeper level that to come to this conclusion, it took them a very, very long time. That is from there only these two words came, samashti and vrishti. Vrishti is we are, samashti is the one outside. This is samashti, we are vrishti. What is in the vrishti is there in the samashti. What is in samashti is also in the vrishti. That is how the Upanishad says. Vrishti and samashti. So, they call it another word, brahmandam and pindandam. Pindandam is what we are, brahmandam is that. What is in the brahmandam is there in the pindandam. What is in the pindandam is there in the brahmandam. So, that is why they started giving, after searching for so many years, great, great sages, in the forest they have worked through their deepest intellect and deepest brain, Shraddha. They have given attention to that through various austerities, penances, and they engaged, spent a lot of time. Eventually they came to the conclusion that everything what is there is inside this, is inside this as well. If you know the substance inside, you will know the substance what is outside there as well. And so in order that, that attention, in order that to happen, scientists are searching. Scientists have no basis. They are just going on searching, searching. Like you are walking through the street, you lost something. What will you do? You will go search everywhere till you get it. If you didn't get it, then you have to leave it. Scientist situations are like that now. They keep on searching. They are not getting it. But they are saying, we'll keep on searching and searching and searching. Goes on like this. It will never come to an end, that search. It will go for endlessly. They'll keep on searching. Moon is finished now. Now it is Mars. And after Mars, Saturn. And then they'll say, well, then there is no life in anywhere else. Prabhupada used to laugh about that. He says, when the scientist says there is no life in other places, he says, oh, you are the such an authority. Now there's only life in this world, is it? He said. Because when you look into Vedic literature, they are telling us there is all kinds of creation, personalities in creation. Siddhas, Charanas, Guhyagas, Kinaras, Kimpurushas. Unlimited species are spoken there. And we are saying there is no life anywhere. He says, I am not so foolish to accept this kind of statement, he said, that there is no life anywhere else. You go somewhere with your meters and the in the tools and you search, dig somewhere and comes out and says to us, oh, there is no life here because there is no water there. This is their logic. That's not proper, because in the Bhagavatam you will see that many, many great personalities, that they had different kinds of body based upon the different material elements. Some people have fiery body who can go into the sun planet because they've got the body suitable for that temperature. And some people have the watery body. Even that we find in this world itself. Fish and aquatics, they can live in the water all the time. They have a body suitable for that. From that we have to understand that there must be other living entities with different bodies which is suitable for different conditions. It is supposed to, has to happen like that. To think that this is the only body that Krishna has created and this is the only place where life exists, that is a little bit illogical to accept. So that is the point. So similarly, the scientists also, they are going after the searching for life. Is there life in moon? Is there life in Mars? Is there life in other planets? That will go endlessly. And you may not, many other planets, we may not be able to reach there even if you travel 40, 50,000 years, you may not be able to get there, that far they are from here. So Krishna, so therefore, initial first and foremost thing is to get our attention inside. Our attention inside. Many people doesn't even think that it is a necessity to go inward looking for that. That is why you will see that Kathopanishad mentions this, isn't it? Kathopanishad says in a nice way. How Kathopanishad says? Kathopanishad blames Krishna for that. He says, you have created us in this way, everything outwardly. That's how we were created. If you look into Kathopanishad words, it mentions there, that second chapter, Prathama Vali, Paranjikha Nivyatranal Swayambhu, Stasmal paran pashyadinandaralman kaschil diraha pratyagalpmanamaikshal avurta chachvan amrdatvamichan. This is a very important verse in the Kathopanishad. Paranjikhanivyam. Paranjikhanivya tranal swayambhu. Tasmal parang pashyadi andaralman kaschil diraha പ്രത്യേകാത്മാനം ഐക്ഷൽ ആവൃത്ത ചക്ഷുൾ അമൃതത്വമിച്ഛൻ. വെരി വെരി നൈസ് വേർഡ്സ്, വെരി നൈസ് ഇൻ ദ സെൻസ്. നോർമലി ഓൾ അവർ സെൻസസ് മൈൻഡ് എവറിഥിങ് ഈസ് എക്സ്റ്റേണൽ, ഇസ്ന്റ് ഇറ്റ്? ഔട്ട്വേർഡ് ലുക്കിംഗ്. ഇറ്റ് ഗോസ് ടു ദ വേൾഡ് വെരി ഈസിലി, നെവർ ഗോസ് ഇൻവേർഡ് ഇറ്റ് ടു ദ ഇന്നർ വേൾഡ്. ഇറ്റ് ഗോസ് ടു ദി ഔട്ടർ വേൾഡ് വെരി ഈസിലി. ഇറ്റ്സ് ഓപ്പൺ ഓൾ ദ വിൻഡോസ്, ഓൾ ദ സെൻസസ്, ദ മൈൻഡ്, എവറിഥിങ് ഈസ് ഓപ്പൺ ടു ദ വേൾഡ് വെരി ഈസിലി. ഓപ്പൺ ടു ദ വേൾഡ് മീൻസ് ഇറ്റ് ഗോസ് ടു ദ വേൾഡ് ആൻഡ് ലുക്സ് ഫോർ സെൻസ് എൻജോയ്മെന്റ്. ദാറ്റ്സ് വാട്ട് ഇറ്റ് ഡസ്, ഇസ്ന്റ് ഇറ്റ്? സോ ഇറ്റ് ഹാസ് ഗോട്ട് ദിസ് നേച്ചർ, ഇറ്റ് ക്യാൻ അണ്ടർസ്റ്റാൻഡ് അബൌട്ട് എവറിഥിങ് എക്സെപ്റ്റ് ഹിംസെൽഫ്. That is another important thing. Anything can be taught about everybody else, but you don't know about yourself. This is our situation. Why? Because these senses, mind, intelligence, everything is very much outward looking. Because it is outward looking, it goes out and looks outside everything and studies everything, all the different species, all the different planets, all the different countries. We go underneath the water, find out what goes on there. We go into the sky, above the earth, in the space, what goes on there. All these things we will find out, but we won't find out about ourselves what we are. So that's what it mentions here. It can find out everything outside, but it cannot find out about itself, Alma, about the soul. About the body also it will find out everything, but about its own soul, he won't know anything about it. So although it is the natural way Krishna has created us, why don't we change it? If you ask that question, why don't we change it? And that is our desire also. We also want to go inward looking, isn't it? To understand what is inside, what we are, our identity, spiritual identity, we want to realize. So, sense objects are concerned. Our desire is wants to enjoy, but never we get a desire not to have sense enjoyment. Why is it like that? Always desire comes to enjoy. Never a desire comes not to enjoy unless we are punished. Only when you are punished you say, oh, I won't have it. But otherwise the tendency is to enjoy always. And we tell everybody, isn't it? Have a good time. Enjoy yourself. We say like that to people, isn't it? What does it mean? That means this person who is saying this, you enjoy, and the person who listens, I want to enjoy, he also wants to enjoy. So we don't tell anybody, oh, be miserable, don't enjoy anything. We don't say that to anybody. Why? Because that is the way we are created like that. We are created like that. Nobody thought. Therefore, even after a very long period of time, still we are unable to see the truth inside, the soul's presence inside. But, and even if at some point in time people are able to give up that attachment to the sense enjoyment and was able to withdraw the senses from the sense objects, and he had the desire to direct it towards the self, and even if one had the courage and shraddha for doing that, such a person alone eventually succeeds in doing that. Only such a person who has managed to control all his senses, mind, everything, and was able to shut it down and completely turn all the attention, shraddha, inward, towards him, inward, and he alone eventually realizes the truth. So here, the same knowledge of the soul eventually leads into liberations, isn't it? So that is how mentioned in the last chapter in the Kathopanishad also. But Upanishad says here, Paranji Khanivya Trinal Swayambhu. Brahma created us in this way that Paranji Khanivya. Paranji Khanivya means everything looking outwardly. And all what he is seeing is Parag. Tasmal Parang Pashyati Na Alma, Alma Na Andar Alman. Because he has created it like that, in that way, the senses. Therefore, whenever we look outside, whenever we look, what we see is outside objects. We never see the soul. Because Brahma has created us like that. There's a mistake in the manufacturing defect in us. Paranchi Khanivya Trinal Swayambhu. Swayambhu is Brahma. Brahma created these senses and the mind which are outward looking. And because its nature is like Tasmal, Parang pashyati na antaralman. It only sees the things outside, never the soul inside. Na antaralman. Kaschil dhiraha. Therefore, only a courageous person who has understood this defect in him, he will go inward looking, pratyagalpmani. Seeing the truth inside is called pratyagalpma. Another word for the soul. Pratyagalpmani aishad. Avurta chakshum amrutatva michan. That what he does says, avurta chakshun. That means all the senses, he opens it inwards. All the windows. Senses are all opened inwards. And amrutatva michan. He has a desire to free himself from this cycle of birth, immortality in other words. He desires immortality. So here you can see Brahma created us in this way, all senses directed outwardly, and Krishna got inside and sat there. Brahma created us, everything outward looking, senses, mind, everything looking to the world outside. Then Krishna goes and sits inside. That's the soul. Krishna goes and sits inside. And then Krishna is telling us, look inwards, look inwards. Look inwards, look inwards. Krishna is saying to us, isn't it? All the rishis are telling us, look inward, inward look, look inwards. It's there, the truth is inside. But you created us in this way and then you are telling us to look inwards, he says. So all the senses, eyes, ears, everything, and we don't have that capacity, or we don't have that skill, kaushalam, kushalata, to look inwards. We don't know how to look inwards. And it has made us, that is the situation where we are today. That's what we are now. Krishna is inside, we are looking outside, and we go on living like this, in this way. So, and we keep on looking outside still. We are still looking outside. And infinity. And what we see this is, when you look outside, it is infinity, isn't it? Infinity. Endless it is. You don't know how far you can look. With the eyes, you will see some distance. If you put some telescope, you will see a little bit more. Then you build a very massive telescope with a lot more attachments. You can see a lot more than that. But still there is space after that. You can't see it. It's endless, that is, isn't it? Unlimited. Therefore, it's called Ananta. Ananta means unlimited. So, infinity is also, if you look in the letter, infinity when you put in mathematics, it's like 8, if you make it horizontal, it's like infinity, isn't it? So, infinity is also like that. These are the symbols there, isn't it? Alpha, the letter 8, if you put it horizontal, instead of like this, you turn it down, turn it like horizontal, it looks like infinity in that way. So, here and there we have some knowledge of little bit pieces, bits and pieces. So, vivara prasuti. Sa esha jivo vivara prasuti. Krishna mentions this in the 12th chapter of the 11th canto. Sa esha jivo vivara prasuti. Vivara prasuti means that he has got little bit of information here and there, knowledge. He doesn't have the proper, perfect knowledge he doesn't have. Therefore, he is vivara prasuti. Jiva is vivara prasuti. Vivara prasuti means he has got some ideas here and there, but he doesn't have a full idea. As we say, that paranjaganil, everything outside, Krishna goes and sits inside and tells us to look inwards. Looking. So, kaschil dhiraha. So, if you say to people that, if you people who have taken the decision, we want to realize the truth, and they have turned their attention inwards, to pratyagalpa, and they started seeing their own sarubam, then what they are really made of, then you can say there that when a person realizes Krishna in that way as his own sarubam, andaryami inside, then Shruti says here, what should a person do in that state to who cannot turn his attention inwards? Shruti is answering that question. For a person who cannot turn his attention inwards, what he should do? No matter what you do, mind is not going inward looking. What should we do? That's the biggest problem. First problem. First hurdle. No matter what we do, the mind is still going out. The mind is still going out. And even if you close your eyes, still it's not going in. It's not going in. And he also knows that if he goes outside, there is distress. There is distress in the world. And it cannot go inside either. And when it goes outside, there is distress. What should one do? If you ask that question, and what should we answer to that question? Because we have found out that there is distress in this world, and there is problem in this world, and there is no way to come out of it. We have found out all that. Because as soon as we were born, what did we do to the first thing? As soon as we came out of the womb of the mother, the first thing, what did we do? Everybody has done only one thing. They cried. Isn't it? Everyone. Whether it is, nobody has come without crying from inside. So that is what we have done. And that is a similar situation now. That we know that the truth Shastram is telling us is inside. But we are not able to look inside. And we look outside in the world and we are very comfortable with that, looking outside. But looking inside is difficult. So similarly, Shastram says to us that through bhakti, through devotion, one has to cry to Krishna, and that's the only way it can happen. That's the only way it can happen through bhakti. Because that one thing, you can't do anything about it. That if a person says, I can't look inwards, I can only look outside, then the only thing you have to do is to pray to Krishna, to cry to Krishna, to give me that capacity to look inwards. Because spiritual life is like that. That realization cannot happen otherwise. People say crying is unnatural. But the most natural thing in this world is crying. Because everybody has started their life in this world with crying, isn't it? So that some people will say, how can we cry? Because I don't believe in a God. Then how can I cry for help? How can I cry for help? So, then the question you have to ask is, when a child is born, did he cry because he had faith in God? He didn't, did he? He cried. So, you don't need faith, you don't need to know the person to cry. That is how you cry. The child cried, he didn't know anything when he came out. He just cried. He needs food, he needs a drink, he needs care. So he cried, isn't it? So this logic to say that I don't know God, therefore I can't cry, doesn't mean anything. That's a wrong logic. It's not the proper logic. Because when you cried first time, you didn't know anything about Krishna, you didn't know anything about God, but you cried still. So that's what I'm saying. That's what Shastram is saying to us. Crying is not an unnatural thing. It's the most natural thing in everybody. That crying means, practically also it means surrender to Krishna. So, and you don't have to have faith in Krishna for that. You may or may not have faith. That's another thing. People say, oh, I don't believe in God. I don't have any faith in God, they will say, when they are in trouble. They'll say, I don't have any faith in God, so I can't cry, they'll say. So, just like the child doesn't know that help is going to come from anywhere, the child had cried still, isn't it? So, even the child who has born, newly born baby doesn't know that it has got a father or mother or anything like that. It doesn't know anything. But he also doesn't know that there is a solution to his problem, what he is facing. This is the situation with the baby, isn't it? When the baby is born, baby doesn't know that there will be a father and mother to look after the baby. Nor the baby knows that its problem is going to be solved by crying. He doesn't know that either. That is the state at that time. When we were born, it is like that, isn't it? All of us, we all came through that only. That nobody knew, we didn't know our father and mother at that time. We didn't know that they are going to look after us. And we also didn't know that when we cry, that they are going to come and help us. Nothing was known. Complete in ignorance you are crying. Is it not? Complete ignorance you are crying. So that is why he mentions there that baby has cried and the solution has come from somewhere. Solution has come from somewhere. So, after many few years, only the child comes to know that the solution to my problems is my mother. And if I cry, I will get the help. These things the child comes to know later, not while born, not at the time when it was born. So that's by then the intelligence has developed inside and he started understanding this world a little bit. Then all the tantrums started from the children. They start playing all the different games and all that kind of things happens later on, isn't it? But initially the child didn't have no knowledge that there's going to be a father and mother to look after. And the child also didn't know by crying, I'm going to get the solution to the problem, what it wanted, that it was going to get it. He didn't know that, but still he cried, isn't it? So he cried and the solution, help came from somewhere, some source it has come. It may not be always necessarily from father, mother, but from somewhere the help has come. Similarly, when you are in this predicament, when distress comes, or when this situation comes that in spiritual life I can't make any progress, I can't understand, I can't realize it, I can't get any help, I'm not going any more further from where I am, the solution to the problem is to cry to Krishna. There is no other way. That is the easiest and the best process. Krishna knows that if you are crying like this, the help will come. That is the way it is structured. That's the way it is structured. If you cry like that with this understanding, then the help must come from the higher source. Like for the baby, who arranged everything? Krishna has arranged everything. Krishna has arranged everything in a proper way. While within the womb also, who looked after the baby? Krishna has looked after the baby. So after coming out also, till its own intelligence develops and able to look after itself, all arrangements Krishna makes for that living entity to survive in this world. That is the way it happens. So here also, pain is coming. We have the pain. The pain is coming from where? It is coming from the heart. You feel that disappointment inside, isn't it? Everyone feels inside that disappointment. We hear Srimad Bhagavatam, we hear Bhagavad Gita, and we realize it, that there is a higher truth to be realized in this life. And we want to have it, but we are unable to do that. And we cry, and the crying feeling, that emotions that come from the heart, comes from the heart. So because it's coming from the heart, the emotions of feeling that helplessness is coming from the heart, the solution to the problem is also in the heart. Aham, aham, asmi, that thing, what is inside, that's where it is coming from. So, Andaryami is inside there. That Andaryami is the solution to make us Andarmukham. Andaryami means one who is living inside. Andarmukham means looking inwards. Looking inwards. That is Andarmukhatvam. All sages are Andarmukham. Vedavyasa Maharshi has got Andarmukhatvam. Sages, all sages, have got this quality known as Andarmukhatvam. We are all Bahirmukhatvam. Bahirmukhatvam means looking outwardly. Sages always looks inwards. That's why they are called sages. Kranda Darshi, Sushmada, these are their nature. That means they can see things in a much deeper and subtle level. Therefore they are called Andarmukhatvam. Andarmukhatvam. So when that happens, Andaryami inside, who is Krishna inside, that Krishna, in order to solve the problem, in order to find a solution for the distress of the devotee, in order to do that, or the mind which is struggling very hard to go inward looking, Andarmukhatvam, in order to make it Andarmukham, that Andaryami inside, it takes a form and comes outside. It takes a form and comes outside. And that is what you will see in the Bhagavadam, reference to spiritual master. Is that form from inside Andaryami, when it sees that distress inside of the devotee or the person who wants to look inwards, he is not able to do it. All his attention is going in the world. Mind has gone so far into the world, he's finding it difficult to turn its attention inwards. When it comes to that state, and when he's crying for help, at that time the Andaryami inside takes a form and comes outside to help, to push it inwards, to looking. That's what he does. That is Guru. That is the spiritual master. If you look into 8th canto of Bhagavatam, this principle is explained very well. How this works. This is without knowing, guru is not something an institution tells you, I got a list of 100 gurus, pick one from this. We'll arrange the fire sacrifice, you sit there, we'll chant some mantra, give you a name, give you a mala, and says, now you are initiated, I am the guru, you are the disciple. No, that's all bogus. It's completely bogus. It doesn't work like that. This is the principle of the Guru Tattvam. Guru Tattvam is there. Tattvam is this, that you understand this. If it all goes in this way, the result must come. If the result is not coming, something wrong in the process. That's what it is. That's something wrong in the process. The system has failed. That's what it is. So, naturally, that is why spiritual knowledge, if you propagate a lot, nothing much will happen from that. Only thing is, a lot of people will change their way of life. There are a lot of good things also by propagation, no doubt about that. That a lot of people will understand that it's necessary to follow certain disciplined life. So at least that much is good. That they will give up sinful activities, live a better, more controlled life, disciplined life. That may, in course of time, help you to get to understand these things better. But by doing those things alone, the truth is not going to come. The spiritual master's arrangement is such that Antaryami inside has to feel that necessity, that the person is really looking genuinely for the truth, and he wants to get his attention out from the world to that inner world, to go inside. And in order to help him, Antaryami inside makes that decision and he appears in a particular form outside. Let's look into the 8th canto, 8th chapter, verse 12. You will see how Bhagavatam puts that in perspective. 8:18. In the Vamanamurti's appearance, Bali, Mahabali and Vamanamurti discussing each other. 8:18:12. It is a conversation there. Vamanamurti, as Krishna has come as Vamanamurti, isn't it? Vamanamurti has come to Mahabali's sacrifice. On the banks of the river, Narmada river, this sacrifice is happening. Bhrigu Kacham, that place is still there. And that is the place where this happened. Mahabali's famous sacrifice happened there. And that is where Vamanamurti comes there. That's a beautiful way of presenting that, Mahabali, Vamanamurti's arrival there. That... Aditi Devi, Kashyapa Prajapati's wife, Aditi Devi, she performs penances, and the result of that was because her children, the demigods, they lost the possession of the heavenly planets and they went. So they were in trouble. So the mother decided to help the children. So Aditi Devi went to Kashyapa Prajapati and told Kashyapa Prajapati, what should I do? Kashyapa Prajapati has two wives, Aditi Devi and Didi Devi, isn't it? All the demigods are from Aditi Devi, all the demons are from Didi Devi. So Aditi Devi, on instructions from Kashyapa Prajapati, performed austerities and penances, and eventually Vamanamurti appeared. And Vamanamurti appeared, and Vamanamurti told Aditi Devi like this, your sacrifice, your austerities and penances were very good, but I can't guarantee the result, he said to her. I can't guarantee the results because Krishna says to her, Krishna is Vamanamurti, Krishna says to Aditi Devi that you have done everything right, everything is correct, but Mahabali has also done the things right. Mahabali took over everything. Indra's planets, all the heavenly planets came under Mahabali's control. All higher planets, lower planets, earthly planets, the whole universe is under Mahabali's control. Indra lost his place. So Indra's mother is Aditi Devi. And Aditi Devi performed this penances, payovratam, she performed. And Krishna says and says to them, you followed everything correctly. Payovratam was performed perfectly as spoken by Kashyapa Prajapati. And as far as the result is concerned, I can't guarantee you the result. I cannot. So Aditi Devi was in a little bit of a dilemma. She has done all these things. She thought that Vamanamurti will say something, will do something to get the heavenly planets back to Indra. But the reply was like this. Vamanamurti says, I can't guarantee that. So Aditi Devi asked why. Vamanamurti says, what can I do? Mahabali is also doing the same thing. He has performed 99, something like 99 Ashwamedham sacrifice. And he has pleased the Brahmanas and the sages to such a level that they are all very pleased with him. Now what can I do? Vamanamurti says, I can't do anything about it. See Krishna's difficulty. When Mahabali, through his austerities and penances, and he performed so many sacrifices to please all the great sages, including his own spiritual master Shukracharya, and they were all totally in happiness with Mahabali because he pleased them so much by his activities. So Krishna says to Aditi Devi, therefore I can't do anything about it at the moment, but mother, if you wait for some time, I will see if there is anything I can try, I can give it a try and see what happens. Something I'll try to do. That is how he started this, Mahabali, Vamanamurti's conversations with Mahabali. And then this Mahabali, what did he do? He decided to go and beg from Mahabali. Who? Vamanamurti. That's what he thought the best thing to do is to go and beg from him. Because Vamanamurti knew this weakness of Mahabali. Mahabali was a very charitable person. Remember that Mahabali was so charitable, he will give everything, anything what he has got. Such a charitable nature he had. So he was performing this sacrifice in Narmada river bank in Bhrigu Kacham, where Shukracharya was present, his wife Vindhyavali was there, Mahabali was there, Vamanamurti walked into that spot. And that's where this conversation happened between Mahabali and Vamanamurti. When they got there, what happened? That is what it is. So, Vamanamurti appeared and mentions there, Yatvad Baburbhadi Vibhushana Yuthai, 12th verse, Avyakta Chidvakta Mathara Yadhari, Babhuva Teneiva Sa Vamano Vadum, Sampashador Divyagadir Yatha Natham. Yatadva Burubhadi Vibhushana Yuthai Avyakta Chidvyakta Mathara Yadhari Babhuvate Neiva Savamano Vadu Sampashyador Divyagadir Yatha Natham. So, Sampashyador Divyagadir Yatha Natham says here that who came as Vamanamurti? Who came as Vamanamurti? Andaryami. Andaryami took that dress as Vamanamurti. Then avatarayato harihi sambashyato divyagadir yatha natam. If you look there, tam vadam vamanam drishtva mudamana maharshaya karmani karaya masu puralaskritya prajapatim tasyovaniya manasya savitrim savida bravid brihaspadir brahmasutram mekhalam kashyapo adadan. Dadau Krishna Jinam Bhumir Dandam Somo Vanaspati Kaubin Achadanam Mada Dyau Chatram Jagadpate. So when it says here in the 12th verse, Yatad Baburbhadi Vibhushanad Ayudhai, that next line you look, Avyaktam Chidvyaktam Atharayad Hari. What is that? Avyakta Chidvyaktam Atharayad Hari. That means avyaktam. Who is that? Antaryami. Antaryami is that avyaktam inside. Yeah. Avyaktam and chidrubam. Chidvyaktam. Again that word chit. Avyaktam, chidvyaktam, adharayat hari. That hari who is inside avyaktam and who is chitshakti has come as Vamanamurti outside. Vamanamurti has appeared. That's why Shuka Brahmarshi uses that word at the right place when he has to say this thing. That. So here also avyakta chidvaktam adharayadhari bhabhuvam bhabhuvateneiva sa vamano vadu sampashador divyagadir yatha nadam. So when we came out, first thing that Antaryami showed was that I am someone important. That's the way he came out. Vamanamurti's appearance was like that. Because as immediately he was born, he grew up in a few moments. He grew up and became a young brahmachari. Birth was like a baby, but in a very short period of time, he became a young brahmachari. To show that I'm not an ordinary child. That's why I'm saying, avyakta chidvyaktam adharayadhari babhuva tenaiva sa vamano vadum, and change the form to show who he is. That I'm not someone ordinary who has come. Babhuva tenaiva sa vamano vadu sampashyador divyagadir yathanatam. And while parents, who are the parents? Kashyapa Prajapati and Aditi Devi, while they were looking at the baby, baby changed its form and became a young brahmachari, Vamanamurti, and stood there in front of them. To show that, I am not an ordinary child who had come. And both Kashyapa Prajapati understood, Aditi Devi understood who has come. Because earlier, Krishna has said to Aditi Devi, I'll take birth as your child and then I'll try to do something to get the heavenly planets back from Indra and hand up from Mahabali and give it back to your children. That was the promise, isn't it? So, when she appeared, Tam vadum vamanam drishtva modamana maharshaya karmani karayamasu puraskritya prajapadim. Then, when Vamanamurti appeared, they immediately realized it is Krishna who has come, is Vamanamurti. And the sages completely satisfied, all the sages who are present there. In Kashyapa Prajapati's ashram, there were other great sages also present there at that time, when this incident happened. So all the sages got together, many other great personalities there who were present there, they all got together and keeping Kashyapa Prajapati there, they performed all the ceremonies what necessary when a child is born. Jatakarmam, all other Namakaranam, all other ceremonies were performed at that time. Upanayanam. So by now, the child is almost ready for Upanayanam. Upanayanam, which is performed normally at the age of 8. 8 years old child. So birth, very short period of time, in a few moments, the child has grown into a brahmachari. 8-year-old brahmachari. So that Upanayanam ceremony, second initiation as we call it today, is the what was done then. That is mentioned. Tasi upaniyamanasya savitrim savita abravid. Brihaspati brahmasutram kekhalam kashyapo adadat. Dadau krishnajanam bhumir dandam somo vanaspati kaubin achadanam madav dyav chatram jagatapade. All those things are spoken there. So that Antaryami inside who came out as Vamanamurti. Vamanamurti. So that thing, what is inside everyone as Antaryami, which is our Swarupam, isn't it? Aham Antaryami Swarupam inside, Aham Aham inside. That, and that is where that awareness is coming from, our awareness of existence. In other words, that is called as the Adhishtanam. Adhishtanam means, it is from there everything begins. From that awareness, everything begins. The mind, the intelligence, the ego, the gross body, all karmic activities, karmam, and all other sensual activities, everything, the origin, if you look, it is from that source, which is the Antaryami. So we are trying to get back to that source, isn't it? And when we are looking inside and we are not able to find that source, he comes out in this form outside, and we are all sitting in this world with one dress, with this body. We are sitting here, isn't it? So, if we can take a body like this, that vastu inside Antaryami, why should he has got a problem to get a form? He should not have a problem either. We have managed to get a body, isn't it? Which is our form now, this gross body. If we can get a body like this, why Antaryami cannot have a form? Antaryami also can get a body and come in front of us. So that is why, because Antaryami is Nitya Vastu. Antaryami is Nitya Vastu. So Nitya Vastu should not have any problem. Actually, in reality, that Nitya Vastu, that eternal substance inside, that is sitting in this world in different forms. All the different forms what we see is that Vastu, same Vastu which is inside. All species, birds, aquatics, plants, creepers, and then human species, animals, birds, bees, whatever it is, any living entity in this world, every form is the same Antaryami who is inside has taken those different forms and present in front of us. Present in front of us. And in Srimad Bhagavatam, while talking about this, it mentions that this capacity for Antaryami to accept any form, it is called Swechopatha Prithak Vapu. That means, according to its desire, Icha. Icha means its own desire, Swecha. Swechopatha Prithak Vapu. Prithak Vapu, Vapu means body. That in various forms, it can appear in this world. That's how creation has come about. Swechopatha Prithak Vapu. This is discussed in between Krishna and Uddhava. If you look in the 11th canto, you will see this word. Swechopatha Prithak Vapu. So, Srimad Bhagavatam says that. So, the purpose of coming like this in a particular form, what is the need? Because at the moment, our attention is caught up in different forms in this world. In different forms in this world. And in order to pull our attention from all the other forms and bring into the real form of ours, what it is. In order to do that, and to bring our attention and keep our attention focused on that, for that purpose, it is necessary to do that. Antaryami has to come out and change our attention from the other forms in this world to our pure form, what we are. Now what we are seeing is this external, what we see through the senses, isn't it? Through the eyes we are seeing a particular form, but we don't even know that what it is. Shastram is telling us everything is Krishna, Brahman. But we say we don't see anywhere Krishna. We don't see anywhere Brahman. What we are seeing is buildings and roads and cars and trees and plants and creepers and animals and everything. We don't see Krishna anywhere. So there itself the vision is defect. Krishna, Bhagavatam is saying to us that in order, the purpose of Antaryami to take a form and to come outside is this. It has to forcefully take our attention from this what you are seeing now to your own form, your spiritual identity, what you are actually, to take that attention from the world to this attention towards the self, towards the soul, in other words. And that is why Swechopatha Prithak Vapu, Uddhava mentions that to Krishna. While glorifying Krishna in the Ekadasha Skandam, Uddhava says to Krishna, you are Swechopatha Prithak Vapu, who accepts whatever form necessary so that people's attention will go from the world outside and attention will turn inside towards the soul. You will take that form what is necessary. He is capable of doing that. In this, that's why any form Krishna has taken. Krishna has taken the form of a boar, half man, half lion, fish, tortoise, Ramachandra, Balaram, Buddha, so many different forms, Kapila Maharshi, all are Krishna's expansions. Whatever that is necessary to help people who wants to take their attention away from the world, to go inward, to realize the truth, whatever form that is necessary, Krishna will take that form. That is why this variegatedness in the different incarnations have come. Swechopatha Prithak Vapu. it says. Swachchopathaprada. Uddhava says this to Krishna. So, therefore, creation is always very depressing, isn't it? Sometimes when you see when we see the world through our eyes, and we see all the miseries and distress in this world, we start thinking, why this creation like this? Is it not? Kashta ade srishti cheshta. Why this srishti? It's kashtam. It is very sad. Bahudarya bhava khedaha jiva bhaja. All different kinds of living entities has been created. And people start thinking, ityevam purvam alochitam. We thought like this, why this all misery has been created? You have given these different forms to different living entities, and they have come here and they are suffering through their mind, body, intelligence, everything. People, Acharya says, ityevam purvam alochitam. We thought like this before. Ajidamaya naiva madhyabhijani. Then how does this going to come to an end? We don't know that either. No jail, jiva kathamva madhurataramidam. But later on, this is in the Narayaniyam says, later on I thought about this, that purpose of creation is something different than all these things. I used to think why you have put them into all this misery, but now I can see the idea behind it. If you have not done this creation, no chel jiva kathamva madhurataramidam, how will they understand your glories, your greatness? No chel jiva kathamva madhurataramidam tvadvabhuschidrasardram netrai shrotrai shamitva paramanasa sudhambodhi pureramiran. When you are given them this opportunity of having these five senses to them, you are given them five senses. Netram, eyes, ears, the five senses of knowledge. Because you gave them these five senses of knowledge, through those five senses, they can start knowing you. They can start knowing you. Through netrai shrotraischa pitva. That means, through the eyes they can drink, through the ears they can drink you. Drink the nectar. Nectar means Krishna. Amritam, Atma, soul. So, to drink that nectar, you need these senses, and therefore you have given them this body. That is why in the Narayaniyam how it is spoken. Rishis also tells us the same thing, that tudvabhu chindrasa ardram, because your body, Krishna's body, is chidvabhu, it is chit shariram. It is not like our body, isn't it? And because they have got all these senses, through the senses, they can enjoy your body. You are like the gopis did and many other great devotees did. Chidrasardram, from that chit shariram, Krishna's body is that chit. It is chit, isn't it? Chit potency it is. Chidrasardram, that rasam which comes from that chit shakti. So, this particular form of Krishna is not like other forms what we see in this world. Other forms, if they have to become attractive to us, our vision has to go there, isn't it? Our vision has to go there. Whereas this particular form, Krishna's form, what it does is, it comes out and stands in front of us in a most attractive way and captures us towards Him. Normally in our case, all other attraction in this world, man towards woman, woman towards man, when our drishti or vision goes towards the object, it happens. Attraction happens. But in spiritual life, attraction towards Krishna happens when Krishna from inside, He comes outside with a form and stands in front of us and pulls us. At that time attraction happens. Chidbabhu chidrasadram netrai shrotraischa pitva paramanasa sudambodhi pure rameran. Then, that means bodhi pure rameran. In order to give us that happiness, He takes the form and comes outside. And then what He does, when He appears like that, our attention starts going inwards. That's what happens. When Krishna appears, directly or indirectly as spiritual master. That's why we say spiritual master is non-different from Krishna for this reason. Because he is Antaryami, who has come out from outside and stood in front of us. And what he will do, he will take your attention inwards, inward looking nature. So that is the difference there. And this one particular thing in the Sri Vaishnava Sampradayam, Ramanuja Sampradayam, they call it as Vibhuti. The word they use it there is Vibhuti for this particular aspect of Krishna, who comes out and takes us go inward looking. That's called a Vibhuti. This all Krishna's Vibhuti. Sri Vaishnava Sampradayam calls it a Vibhuti. What is the speciality with Vibhuti? Vibhuti means so many things, amazing things in this world, all of them takes our attention outwardly. Whereas this one thing, Vibhuti, what it does is, it takes our attention inwards. That is the difference. All other objects in this world, it takes our attention outward. This one thing, Antaryami inside, when it manifests outside as Vibhuti, it takes our attention inwards. Even the deity in the temple, as far as Ramanujacharya is concerned, it's a Vibhuti, Archa Vigraham. Why? The deity is meant to take our attention towards the soul, self-realization. Therefore, it is a Vibhuti. It is a Vibhuti. We'll stop there now. It's 25 past, I think. Continue tomorrow. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.